Hello, I'm Oliver Wong, flying solo today, but Morgan Rhodes will be back soon. Every episode here on Heat Rocks, we invite a guest to talk about a heat rock, that is, an album that sizzles its way into the collective consciousness. And today we will be serving up the flavor of the month by revisiting the debut 1991 album by Drez and Mr. Long, aka Black Sheep.
So move to a rhythm that's quite uplifting. Just when you're folding nothing would arise, I'm drifting higher. Yeah, higher. I'm not a king, a prince, a ruler, or a squire. I'm not a prophet and I'm not a messiah. I'm not a wolf or another flat tire.
On the intro to the album, the group warns us that there's always a black sheep in the family, and Drez and Mr. Long were holding themselves out as the red-headed stepchildren in the Native Tongues family that also included De La Soul, A Tribe Called Quest, and the Jungle Brothers. Indeed, on this, their debut, Black Sheep showed some of the humor that De La was known for, while their production could roll with both the funk of the Jungle Brothers as well as all that jazz the tribe was collecting, but you wouldn't have confused the group with any of their kin. They were the class clowns, the casually offensive jokesters who were also secretly the smartest kids in school, offering a perfect mesh between Drez's alacrity as an MC and Mr. Long's prodigious talents as a producer, as well as a decent second fiddle on the mic. Especially for 91, this album embodies the spirit of inventiveness, smarts, and charm that made this moment in hip-hop's golden era so precious to those of us who lived through it. A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing wasn't trying to be a world-beating, statement-making LP for the ages, but it had vision and thought. And almost 30 years on, it's still worth a listen, especially for those who slept.
Listen, for a second, I reckon, I got you double-checking. Then again, when to your needs did I beckon? Hold me only if you wanna get naked. Play me for the crowd only if you wanna wreck it. The name is Drez, like silk I get slick. Drop rhymes like a bass head, big flicks. Constantly. Yes, it's me, D-R-E-S.
A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing was the album pick of our guest today, author and screenwriter Adam Mansbach. He recently joined me on one of our mini episodes talking about reggae covers, and I wanted to have him back for a formal episode. When I first met Adam about 15 or so years ago, he was a young novelist with already a few titles to his name, including Shackling Water and Angry Black White Boy. He's been a prolific author in the time since, most famously for his profane quasi-children's book, Go the F to Sleep, and its equally profane sequel, You Have to Effing Eat, when he's not busy writing screenplays such as that of the 2016 young Barack Obama biopic, Barry, or touring the country back when you could do such things with longtime Florida humorist Dave Barry as part of their collaboration on their book, A Field Guide to the Jewish People. Adam is also a consummate record collector with some of the nicest record shelving I've ever seen. He is joining us from the hills of Berkeley, California. Adam, welcome back to Heat Rocks.
Thanks, man. Good to be here.
To give some context to folks as to why it is that we're talking about this particular album, besides its merits on its own, this goes back to a debate that began between Adam and I probably well over 10 years ago. And I don't even remember what the origins were with it, but we got into a debate around what was either the better or more influential album from 1991, A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing by Black Sheep, or the self-titled Cypress Hill debut. And as we just recently did an episode about the Cypress Hill album with another Bay Area person, scholar Felicia Viator, it seemed only right to circle back to the Black Sheep album as kind of a companion episode. And so to be clear, at the time in which we first had this debate, I was Team Cypress Hill and Adam was Team Black Sheep, and I assume that nothing has changed in terms of where we stand on this. So Adam, I'm not asking you to defend your choice, but I do want to know, what do you think makes this Black Sheep album so great?
It's a lot of things. And, you know, as with any album that comes out at such a formative time in your life, because I was like 14 when this album came out, and I was an MC and I was spending most or all of my time engaged in various hip-hop related pursuits, if you construe hip-hop related, you know, widely enough to include like trying to get some weed and, you know, trying to get girls to talk to me. It resonated with me because for one thing, it was very relatable. Not that I was rolling around town Big Willie style the way that Drez was talking about, but there was a mundanity and an everydayness even to the braggadocio that he was engaged in. And there was an aspiration to be slick and smooth and a certain arrogance and cockiness that seemed both larger than life and well within reach, if that makes sense. You know, it was a time like 90, 91, 92. I just remember this feeling suddenly that I could relate a lot more easily and directly to some of the records that were coming out because they spoke about and embodied so many of the things I was actually doing. You know, Main Source was another one, right? I remember listening to Just Hanging Out and being like, check, check, check. Like, these are the things I do, you know? You know,
young Adam Mansbach was hanging out and hustling with his friends. Is this what we're saying?
Yeah, fucking right I was. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think part of it was that was aging into a certain kind of relatability, you know, which wasn't the case, whatever, 3-4 years earlier when KRS-One was talking about like shooting up the dudes who rushed the Herb Gate. You know, I couldn't relate as strongly to that as I could to like, you know, rolling around town, buying records and talking about plans for the weekend and feeling like you were the man and haters could give you the finger if they didn't like it. And, you know, that type of energy resonated with me. In terms of why this album specifically spoke so strongly to me, it was just a consummate rap album of the moment. It's interesting. I was thinking about this in the lead up to this call, and I was thinking whether or not to advance this argument, and I've decided that I can make this argument, which is that for the year 1991, Drez wins the year. Drez is the best MC of 1991. It's a weak year in an incredibly fruitful time period in terms of who's dropping albums, in terms of who is, like, you know, at the top of the pile, right? Like, in 1990, Brand Nubian dropped an album, X-Clan dropped an album, KRS-One dropped an album, and 91 a little bit less so, lyrically. I mean, Tribe and De La dropped incredible albums, Ice Cube dropped a big album, Dell drops an album, but like, Drez, I think, pound for pound, wins the year. He carries effortlessly and single-handedly a 20-track album, and he's killing it from front to back on this album. He's versatile, he's witty, he is covering various topics with equal kind of style and elan. And by the same token, in an incredibly competitive year with Low End Theory and De La Soul is Dead, I think you can make a pretty good argument that Mr. Long wins the year on the production side. I think what he's doing with samples on this album is crazy. The sources he's drawing from, the layering, I don't think anybody was really fucking with him. And when I listen to this album now, I still feel that way.
You know what?
I'm sick and tired of rappers not real and suckers making it worth a pop fill. Label signing hats for enough bills. Tax write-off, cause I have no skills. You go make a demo, get a deal and start to sprout. Gold, platinum, and then start selling out. You get a Benz and Trastanova. Over.
So because the Black Sheep were the Black Sheep of the Native Tongues family, I was, of course, very curious to see what this latest group family member was going to be like. And Flavor of the Month, which was the lead single, was nice. I mean, it wasn't like, to me, it's not the fire track off the album, but it's a very serviceable single. Until we heard from Biggie and Hypnotize, it was the first time that I ever thought Herb Albert put together something that would be, you know, worth, from a hip-hop head's perspective, like worth getting down to.
I heard you got the fever for the flavor. I heard you got the fever for the flavor. I heard you got the fever for the flavor. Hurry up and get a scoop before it's gone.
But it really wasn't until The Choice Is Yours Revisited remix came out that I think people really, really sank into this particular album, because that single, and we can talk about this in the second half, but that single was obviously so, so key, so big. This is where Funkmaster Flex would start pushing his bomb button, right? And so I think what stands out to me upon, especially re-listening to this album, and this is an album that I do go back to quite a bit, is that there's a kind of meta-level irreverence and humor that these two have. And this is an album that opens with effectively like a concept song, right? Which is making fun of gangster rap. I want to come back to that point later. And for 91, this seemed really ahead of its time. And certainly folks like De La were self-aware in the same way that I feel like Black Sheep were. But Black Sheep took that self-awareness even a step further, because there are multiple points on this album where they're being active trolls, as we would say in today's parlance, but they were doing this back in 91. And this is definitely an album where both Drez and Mr. Long, you definitely get the sense that they have their tongue in the cheek, even as they're rapping.
Yeah, I mean, that intro is hilarious and stands up really well. It's really over the top. It's hyperbole done with incredible skill. And it's funky and it's fast and it sounds as good or better than most of the shit that actual gangster rappers were talking about.
You're bugging.
And then it turns out
my dude, I know you're like an East Coast guy, even though you've been living in the West Coast and Bay Area for well over 10 years now, but it does not sound better than the best gangster rap coming out of the West Coast. Like, come on.
All right. I mean, okay, whatever. Maybe, you know, it's that Barquet sample, right? They flipped the Barquet sample, and Drez is talking about, like, the mailman came, so I cut his motherfucking throat.
Right.
Waiting for the motherfucking school bus. It's one of the funniest things committed to wax in hip hop to that point, I would say.
Right.
Woke up, didn't choke up, saw my AK, it was broke up, put it together like a jigsaw, got my 9 and my Rambo knife off the floor, went to the bathroom.
And 91 seems like a really pivotal year for this backlash and pushback against the success and the rise of gangster rap. You know, this is the same year that Tim Dog's Fuck Compton, for example, comes out.
All you suckers that riff on the West Coast, I'll diss and spray your ass like a roach. You think you're cool with your curls and your shades, I roll thick and you'll be yelling out raid. A hard brother that lives in New York, we're suckers are hard and we don't have to talk. Shut your mouth before we come out stomping. Hey yo, easy. Fuck Compton. Fuck Compton.
For the most part, I feel like hip-hop is settling to a very live and let live kind of big tent. Like, whatever is your thing, man, just do it, right?
Yeah.
Not in 91. Like, people are drawing lines in the sand and going at the people that they perceive on the other side. And what do you think that was about?
I think that everything you said is very true, but I don't know that I see you mean I'm not necessarily as a drawing of knives or a drawing of a line in the sand. To me, it's very playful.
Oh, wait, sure. But it's a diss. It's a diss song. I mean, it's not like they're not being polite about it. They're making fun of
There's
all
a
these,
difference between yeah. a diss and a parody, though, right? This is actually, to me, a parody rather than a diss. And I might seem like I'm making sort of pointless semantic distinctions here, but a parody gets to be playful. A parody doesn't get you in trouble. And in this case, the parody circles back to them. Because the dream that Drez wakes up from is a dream that he was hard. So the first thing he does on his own album, his debut album, essentially is cop to not being hard, at least by the rubric of West Coast gangster rap. And that's ultimately kind of a self-deprecating thing to do, right? He spins out this whole crazed fantasy about shooting everybody and, like, you know, he shoots his mom in this song, you know, like
right.
he goes, you know, it's a wild over the top song, so much so that I think it goes into the realm of parody and outside the realm of diss. And like nobody took offense to it. The West Coast was not mad at these guys. Mad people have caught mad flack for single lines, for talking slick, you know, misperceptions, you know, like, you know, Tribe Called Quest, you know, got jumped for saying not a New Jack Swing. You know what I mean? Like,
okay, good
point. And this is a different category. I mean, this is something that's a lot more playful. And also, it's got to be, I got to say also, this is a beautifully sequenced album. This is not a rushed or thoughtless arrangement of the songs. This has as much thought in it as like a Public Enemy album.
Oh, sure.
So you hear Drez's voice, yo, what the fuck was the dream about, G? And he's like,
I dreamed that I was hard.
And then the next thing you hear is like the kick and snare. it's a whole different vibe, you know, and it's kind of the rope-a-dope. It's the setup and then the pulling out of the rug. So Drez gives you all of that. And then he leans all the way back in the driver's seat and takes it down to 25 and starts cruising the neighborhood.
It's gotta be style. What happens now? A better man can hold the mic and do the proving. Drez of the Black Sheep, yo, let's get the sheep moving. I'd like to pay a tribute to what to knock and boots. I'm single and I mingle. If you jingle, I play roots, but there's another. The other, the brother on the cover.
Let's just kind of dig a little bit deeper here. I think, you know, to your earlier point about Mr. Long in particular doing stuff on here you weren't seeing a lot of other producers doing. Again, I might quibble with that a little bit, but there is absolutely, to me, there's no question that this album is very, very imaginative in terms of where it's looking for its sample sources. And In fact, I feel like the same conversation came up when we were talking about the Cypress Hill album with Felisa Viator, is that Muggs, in the same way, by 91, people had moved beyond P-Funk. They'd moved beyond the James Brown catalog. And this is really the kind of the beginning of towards the height of the so-called digging in the crates era of production, where people are just mining whatever they can find. This album certainly has a ton of standouts. What are some of your favorite examples of the group flipping a sample?
I mean, let's not overlook The Choice Is Yours just because it was like a huge song.
You're talking about the LP version or the remix?
I'm talking about the remix with the McCoy Tyner bass line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's an incredible use of that sample. It's not an obscure record in the sense that it costs $1 million. It's a pretty easy record to find. That was a record that for years afterward, if you were digging with somebody, you could pull it out and it would be $4 and you could be like, yo, you know what this is?
Yeah.
I mean, the flip of the Freddie Hubbard joint on Black with Envy.
Povo.
I was told to never bite off more than I could chew, but then you better bite enough, for if you don't, my boy, you're blue. Now I wonder.
That was exciting for me, again, because I was able to find that record at the time, you know, which, you know, I only had like $7. So, you know, any record you could come across and know what it was and be able to buy it,
right.
You know.
It's funny because for me, the standout is the use of Gary Bartz's Celestial Blues on To Whom It May Concern. And To Whom It May Concern is one of my favorite songs off the album. And I think a large part of that is because of that Gary Bartz bass line. And to what you were saying a moment ago, in terms of being able to find the original sample source, is once I discovered what it was, and, you know, back, I probably ended up getting the album sometime in the late 90s or early 00s. And I'd been searching for it for a while, but because of the sampling and because it's also just an amazing album, and that Gary Bartz album is incredible. But it was a tough find, and it wasn't something that I wanted to drop, you know, $100 for. I think I probably ended up copying it for somewhere between $40 to $60. But when I was in my 20s, dropping, you know, two sawbucks for a record was a big deal. It meant something more, because it's like, I've been looking for this thing, and it's not that the only reason I would have wanted it is because of the sample, but it's why I even knew about that song and that album to begin with at all. And so I certainly can relate to sort of what it meant to find the sample source. And that, to me, Celestial Blues is top tier in terms of, it meant something really big to me to be able to finally buy the album.
I'm sick and tired of rap that's not real, and suckers making it what the pop feel. Label sign and acts for enough bills. Tax write-off, because I have no skills.
We will be back more with our conversation with Adam Mansbach about A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing by Black Sheep after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
Hi, I'm James, host of Minority Corner, which is a
podcast that's all about intersectionality. It's hosted by James with a guest host every week.
Discussing all sorts of wonderful issues, nerdy and political.
Pop culture.
Black, queer, feminism.
Race, sexuality.
News.
You're going to learn your history, their self-empowerment, and it's told by what feels like your best friend.
Why should someone listen to Minority Corner?
Why not?
Oh my God, free stuff.
There's not free stuff.
The listeners of Minority Corner will enjoy some necessary LOLs, but mainly a look at what's happening in our world through a colorful lens.
People will get the perspective of marginalized communities.
I feel heard. I feel seen.
Like you said, you need to understand how to be more proactive in your community, and this is a great way to get started.
Join us every Friday on Max Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Minority Corner.
Because together, we're the majority.
Macho Man to the top rope. The flying elbow. The cover. We've got a new champion!
We're here with Macho Man Randy Savage after his big win to become the new world champion. What are you going to do now, Match?
I'm going to go listen to the newest episode of the Tights and Fights podcast, oh yeah!
Tell us more about this podcast.
It's the podcast of power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, woke discussions, man, and jokes about wrestlers' fashion choices, myself excluded, yeah.
I can't wait to listen.
Neither can I. You can find it Saturdays on Maximum Fun. Oh, yeah. Dig it.
And we are back on Heat Rocks talking with author Adam Mansbach about Black Sheep's debut 1991 album, A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. Black Sheep are one of the standout examples of early 90s artists who were amazing in the moment. But like a lot of other artists of that same period, and I mean, we're talking a very micro niche, like 90, 91, 92. By the time their second album comes out, it's Nonfiction, the name of the album is Nonfiction, comes out in 94. So it's not that many years later. But they just, to me, as a listener, as a someone who is a huge fan of that first album, they just did not sound as compelling to me by 94. Especially when you're up against, at that point, you're up against The Who, you're up against Nas, you're up against Biggie, Black Moon, etc.
Black sheep in your house, party people you remember, the two that serve your whole crew like the bartender. It's Dynamic D, don't you panic, cause we won't stop until hip-hop is all it could be. Now, you can't check it when I flex it, yo, I wreck. You're turning me off like an egg.
Some other artists from the early 90s were able to make that transition through the mid-90s. I feel like Black Sheep were not ones that were able to make that. And I'm sure you, at the very least, you certainly probably went out and picked up Nonfiction. I don't know what your thoughts on it are. But why is it that you feel like Black Sheep wasn't able to survive that transition?
Man, you know, I wish I knew, because, as you say, a lot of their contemporaries did. De La, Tribe. I wish I knew. It was a very disappointing album. I've tried over the years to like it and to go back to it, and I can't. And it's really too bad. It's one of the more depressing album to album fall offs in hip hop history.
Was it the group, or was it hip hop in general?
The playfulness that you've mentioned a couple of times here.
Yeah.
The playing field looks significantly different in 94. There is a self seriousness.
Very much.
There is a rugged aesthetic, you know, right, that almost really begins, you could argue, in 92, you know, like from the gear people are wearing. Like 92 was really when motherfuckers decided that they had to look like they worked sanitation in sub-zero temperatures at all times, you know.
So it's the Timbos and the Bubble Goose.
The 40 below Tims and the Carhartts, and a lot of rappers pivoted toward a harder aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is, like, I got to say, going back and listening to this record today in preparation, you know, the misogyny of the record is of a particular stripe. And I'd be remiss not to, like, mention it and talk about it. Drez talks about hoes on every song practically, aside from Black with Envy on this album. And that word is hard to listen to now, hard to hear so cavalierly. But I would also say that the misogyny of the record doesn't run very deep as compared to the real brutal anger that you heard on a lot of records directed toward women at this time.
I get what you're saying, and I'm glad you brought this up. I do think amongst the things that don't age well on this album, and really most of the album to me still ages really quite well, but it is the casual sexism. And I get that both of them are using hoes with this wink and nod, but it's a wink, but at whose expense? It's not really at their expense. And even on a skit like Lazmwet, Ladies Against Sexist Motherfuckers, they're right. Ultimately, even though they're kind of putting themselves up for ridicule, at the same time, what they're also ridiculing is, and of course, this terminology didn't exist in 91, is they're making fun of sort of woke people, right? And if wokeness as being, especially within the black community, and the particular kind of that era of gender wars that existed. And it's one of those things where even in 91, I was like, this, I don't find this that funny. And I don't even know why they need to double down on this per se, except, as I said earlier, the two of them had this persona as trolls, and trolling people who get mad at casual sexism was one of their troll moves, which by 2020 standards definitely hasn't aged well. And even in 91, I was like, why is this even necessary in life per se? But you know, it was, but it was an integral part of how they presented themselves on this particular album, even though, to your point, this is not a deeply misogynistic album in the same way that, you know, Ziggas for Life by NWA was a deeply, deeply misogynistic album. This not so much, but just because it's more casual doesn't mean it's not there.
Right, right. Wait a minute. Do you call your mother, your sister, or your grandmother a hoehead girl?
Basically, I do. Right. I mean, they have old, you know what I'm saying?
Mr. Long, what do you mean by this 9.5 thing?
Can we talk about that some other time?
But the people want to know.
Not right now.
But.
Look, I said later, man.
I can dig it.
I bet she can. Holds all of my business.
All right, we've been super meta so far. Let's get really back deep into the tracks. And let's start it off with this. Off of the LP, which means you can't go with the Choice Is Yours remix. Mm. Off of the LP, what is the fire track for you?
I'm going to say Give Me the Finger.
Mm.
That bass line is just incredible. And again, though, the sentiment, you know, I want to make the argument that the persona that Drez invents for himself and occupies on this album is really predictive of where hip hop would go. The swagger that he brings really stood out in 91.
Got an accountant named Mel, a lawyer named Jay. My engineer Lyle, who lives in Studio A. My manager Chris keeps my pockets well fed. Got a honey for each box, spring coil in my bed. My crib's all that without introduction. Do I read books? Nah, I read instructions too. Things you see when your window is sipping on a soda to help rinse the condition. I do what I want and I answer to him.
So I don't know if this would have been my answer in 91, and I was actually really trying to remember, like, what was the one song I heavily gravitated to when I first heard this album? It might have been To Whom It May Concern, which, as I said, is still one of my favorites to this day. But if I'm going with the idea of the fire track being something that just kind of jumps out and slaps you upside the head, I got to go with Have You Any Pull.
What's going on, kid? Time for dress to begin. I see a grin and I'm beginning to think that we're friends. And if we are friends, then we are far from fools. So I will venture to let you enter my sphere, cool? Now listen,
it's especially those thick, heavy shades of brown drums. It's one of my favorite drum breaks of that era. The first time that drum break gets used is by, I think it's Tribe with Excursions, which comes out a month before this album does.
If you got the money, Quest is for the booking. Come on everybody, let's get with the fly mode. Still got room on the truckload of black gold. Listen to the rhyme to get a mental picture of this black man, black woman picture. Why do I?
But I'm wondering if, because obviously if they're both part of the Native Tongues family, did Q-Tip and Mr. Long, were they, you know, did they rap about this album with one another, you know, kind of shared this fun, like, yo, you should try looping this, because the fact that it ends up a month apart on these two different albums by interconnected producers does not seem to me to be a coincidence. Regardless, though, the way in which this track, especially now listening to it, just hits you upside the head. To me, this is the fire track.
And if the source is lost, your boss, I get a verbal back. Until I get through that we are rich with wealth. Can you understand that you should be yourself? Have you any clothes?
Yeah, I mean, this is another one of my favorites. There's a few things that I would say. First of all, certainly Tip and Mr. Long both knew they had that record. Maybe there was one copy of that motherfucker that they were trading back and forth. I was rereading Brian Coleman's chapter on the making of this album in Check the Technique Volume 2.
Shout out to Brian. Yep.
You know, he allowed me to lace him with the intro to that book. So, you know, my name's in very small print on the cover. Brian is a great dude, and that's a great book. And Drez, or Mr. Long, in that chapter makes a reference to a song that was on a Black Sheep demo. And he's like, yeah, the loop on that song, A Tribe Called Quest ended up using it later on one of their songs. And I was like, word? Like, what? I wonder what that was. So, you know, clearly that there was some interplay between them. Another thing notable about this song to me is that it's addressed to a young Chi Ali, who's the kid on the intro who Drez thought of as a younger brother. And it's, you know, it's not One Love. It's not like an epistolary song, but it is at least nominally sort of addressed to the kid at the top of the skit, who's kind of like young and trying to figure out who he is and who he wants to be.
Dad, I wish I was like Jordan, so I could just fly through the air and no one could ever stop me. Or like Mike Tyson, so I could just knock people's heads off. Nah, more like Prince, so I could pull all the honeys. Well, a brother like Chi Ali is pulling all the honeys anyway, but still, it would be nice.
And that's an interesting framing, and it influences the way that Drez goes about rhyming in this song.
That's a great point. You know, I previously disqualified The Choice Is Yours Revisited because it doesn't appear on the original release of the album. This was a remix that appeared in the 12-inch. But I think for a lot of Black Sheep fans, if you're just talking about their body of work, this would be the consensus fire track. And what's funny to me about this, about the song in particular, is number one, as I alluded to in the first half, it is really, really hard to overstate how hype this remix was at the time. To the extent, though, that, and I don't remember exactly when this happened, probably at some point in the late, maybe early 00s. I think this song got like a 10-year run amongst hip-hop DJs, and then it was unofficially retired by the collective, by the hip-hop DJ Massive, alongside of, I think, this song, 93 Till Infinity, and They Reminisce Over You, were all unilaterally retired from play sets because DJs were like, okay, this shit is just way too played out at this point. Now, this said, what were your impressions of The Choice Is Yours Revisited when you first heard it?
First of all, nobody listens to the album version anymore, but the album version is dope too.
It is.
It's really a dope song.
Yeah, it's not as good as the remix, but it's not a flawed song by any means.
Yeah, not at all. Like, you can see why that would have been the single even without a remix. It would have made sense. But yo, first of all, let me say, back to the point I made about an hour ago about how Drez wins 1991.
Yeah.
There's nobody with a bigger song in 1991.
Mm.
You know, there's nothing, you know, among the sort of other contenders for the crown of like best MC of 1991, Drez's re-envisioning of this song on the remix. And then he just comes with the fire third verse, which is the one. I mean, that's the song. That's the verse everybody knows.
Engine number 9 on the New York Transit line. If my train goes off the track, pick it up. Back on the scene, crispy and clean. You can try, but don't worry, because you can't intervene.
You know, before that song got retired, I feel like there was a 2 or 3 year period of time where all DJs were really allowed to do was come in on the third verse.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like the energy of that song, it's so hype. And the video, let's not forget, was really well done and ingenious. It had some really simple but really cool effects where they're reaching toward the screen and like crumpling up the screen as if it was, you know, a piece of paper. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
You know, it was a very creative video for its era. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like, yeah, I mean, shit, put this up against Scenario or, you know, anything on that De La album or anything on these other contending albums, like, this stands the test of time. This is a classic.
Yeah.
This,
Now, in terms of bringing things back to the album as a whole here, do you have any favorite moments off of the album? And for me, the one that I think still tickles me to this day, and it's this is less like a single bar or two bars, it's really the whole second set of verses from Strobe Light Honey, where Drez is trying to come up with excuses for why he can't hang out with this woman that he previously had been hitting on in bad lighting.
Right.
I think I lost my coat. And plus I'm double parked. I thought you was my girl. You see, I can't see in the dark. Anyway, I'm out. Out is where I be. I've got to step with the viscosity. When you see a honey by the strobe light. Black, I hope you got good sight. For honey that
it's so clever and it's so funny. And, you know, to your previous points just about all the work that Drez is doing and how flexible he is as an MC, this to me is just kind of a gem of him at his most playful, but also very smart from a lyrical point of view. So what are some of your favorite moments off this album?
Yeah, I got to step with the viscosity. That's hilarious. No, I mean, this song is a fucking Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. You know what I mean? Like it's slapstick comedy, and Drez is able to balance having himself be the fool
right.
and also having himself be smooth and a player. It's a delicate balancing act, and he's doing it all with a lot of grace. Favorite moments on this album? You know, the skit before The Choice Is Yours, the original Choice Is Yours, like, I still find that shit hilarious all these years later. Like, Drez, and again, it's like, it's so, I mean, like, Drez is surrounded by a bunch of hard dudes who are basically about to kick his ass because he doesn't rhyme about the various ridiculous things they want him to rhyme about.
What's yo, up, man, why you don't be kicking some records about, you know, the upliftment of
black
word.
About the black skyships.
Word.
The man and the dolphins.
Word. Fur coats.
And holding hoes up.
Yo, Busted, I kick about things that I know about. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, I don't want to hear that. Fuck if you that don't show, do that, nigga, some records that I like and I can put my mind
word.
Into,
word. That's what
we
I'm
are going
about.
To fuck you up.
The, when somebody, I don't know who it is, but like whoever is like, dolphins, that shit never fails to crack me up. Like it's just, it's hilarious, but it's also very smart because like, you know, it's a humorous depiction and dramatization of the kinds of critiques rappers were getting, right? Whatever you rap about, you're not rapping about the right thing. You know, your shit, you're not rapping about enough issues. Somebody on the skit is like, and the hole in the hoe zone, you know, like, I mean, this shit is hilarious. Like, and Drez maintains, you know, at his own peril, his own bodily peril, that he raps about what he wants to rap about.
If you had to describe Wolf in Sheep's Clothing in three words, what would your three words be?
Quintessential 91 soundtrack.
Ooh. For our audience members who really enjoyed listening to us talk about Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, what album should they put next on their listening list? And for me, I would suggest that if you were into this Black Sheep album, you should check out a different 1991 hip-hop album, Mr. Hood by KMD, which I think was also a really sophisticated, a very smart, very funny concept album by a talented pair of artists who also, like Black Sheep, did not take themselves too seriously. Shout out to Zev Love X, a.k.a. MF Doom, which people these days would know, be more familiar with. R.I.P., his brother Sub Rock. Shout out to Dante Ross, who A&R'd this project, and he and the Stimulated Dummies produced a couple of the tracks on Mr. Hood, including Hum Rush.
Yeah, a brown man is getting down and kill this fucky sound, then you'll check it out. So block the sound, man. I'm just the on beats, beach kicker, kicking lingo till comes my payday. If rap was sucker, I'll be Pele. Scoring hard, I eat no pork chops.
Nobody ever wants to talk about Onyx the Birthstone Kid, man. What the fuck?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, they're on. My bad. I always forget that he was. I always forget he's on here as well.
No mention. Nah, that's a great. I mean, Mr. Hood is an incredible album, and similarly, sort of true to its own conceptual framework. You know, I mean, more so because they're sampling throughout the same like language instruction record, but it's right beside this record in still being hilarious where it means to be hilarious all these years later, still being vulnerable and funny and virtuosic all these years later. I think that's an incredible pick Oliver. And I would say to round out the trilogy of 91 hip hop releases, I think De La Soul Is Dead is a perfect companion piece.
Yeah.
Another group that is at the height of its creativity, really doing what the fuck they want. Sophomore album, not a debut. So you also get the added bonus of them having like a chip on their shoulder about their own success and the way they've been pigeonholed on the first album and killing themselves off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think De La Soul Is Dead would be another good place to go from here.
Girl meets boy on Thursday night. Boy was high, girl fly like kite. They hold hands until next day. Boy, then let's go hit his way. Boy rolls butt rack to his boy. Girl wrecking brings bad boy joy. Boy thinks of that big fat fat. Big black fat, love big black fat. Girl calls boy to stand him up.
The other thing that's worth noting, too, is that that might have been the first time a lot of people even heard Black Sheep, because they are the recurring characters who are shitting on the De La album.
Right.
I forget the names of their characters. Dick Snot, I think, is one of them, but they're right, the ones right. who they come.
Hated repeated, it. Yeah.
Exactly. They pop in repeatedly throughout this album. So, you know, even before their own debut came out, they were already introducing this kind of very knowing, wink, wink set of personas through the De La Soul Is Dead album. So, yeah, great
pick. Yeah.
No, no.
Yo, but no. Yo, Biddy's is kind of cool. That's pretty fly. I kind of like that.
Biddy's, if you was to flip it on 45 so I can dance to it, you know, it'd be kind of slow. Yo, it's whack, man. Whack.
I give that one props,
too. Why are y'all dissing it? I like it, man.
On to the next one.
Well, that will do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Adam Mansbach. If for folks who did not hear the mini episode that you joined me on, you want to let folks know what you're working on right now?
Yeah, I'm working on a few things. I have a memoir in verse coming out next year with One World, which is an imprint of Random House, called I Had a Brother Once. That'll be my next book. I'm working on a bunch of screenwriting and TV projects, some of which presumably will come to light once we're allowed to congregate within 6 feet of each other. That makes going into production a little difficult, but
yeah,
you know, I'm staying busy in the interim working on some of those things.
And where can people find you online?
They can find me at adammansbach.com or Adam Mansbach on Twitter and Instagram if you want to see pictures of my records and children and the occasional funny quip.
Sounds like a good combo. Adam, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.